Today, the sheer pain of renting in Australia. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics, well, that is post covering finance and property news. Earlier in the week, I highlighted that rental stress across Australia reached an eye-watering 75.5% of those who are currently renting. That's according to my rolling surveys. This means that more than 2.35 million households who are renting have a cash flow problem. It's a national disgrace and is probably the most symbolic aspect of the housing crisis, thanks to failed policies over several decades. Pressure was most extreme in the centre of Melbourne, postcode 3000, but it shows up in regional areas like Toowoomba, as well as the urban fringe, including Liverpool 2170 and Campbelltown 2560, where houses predominate. In fact, Australians face record high rents across all capital cities, according to a new report from Domain, to June 2026. And they say that combined capital house rents re-accelerated in the June quarter, rising $20 to lift annual growth to the strongest in almost 2 years. Unit rents rose $5 over the same period. The increase was both stronger than seasonal norms and relatively abrupt in some cities, pointing to a step change in pricing behaviour rather than a gradual tightening in market conditions. Importantly, the acceleration was concentrated in houses, most clearly in Sydney, Brisbane, Canberra and Darwin, while unit markets picked up only in Sydney and Darwin, with most other capitals showing little evidence of acceleration. This points to city-specific pricing dynamics rather than a single national houses versus unit story. And they added that the timing of the acceleration is notable as greater clarity emerged around proposed housing investment policy changes during April and May. The data suggests that landlords moved quickly to lift asking rents where market conditions allowed. Higher borrowing costs following recent interest rate increases may have also contributed, with investors facing greater pressure to offset rising holding costs. Rather than gradually feeding them through over time, rental increases were brought forward, suggesting owners are positioning for tighter supply conditions and adjusting pricing expectations accordingly. And I see this, by the way, in my gross and net investment yields. Net investment yields are continuing to fall, as I discussed in the earlier show. And they say, for now, the impact is showing up more in landlord sentiment and pricing behaviour than in a broad deterioration in rental availability. Larger structural effects are likely to emerge over time as investor behaviour adjusts more materially to the new settings, which of course includes multiple people living in the same property or people going back to live with mum and dad. Now, at the same time, tighter supply isn't translating into growth everywhere. Vacancy rates remained near historic lows nationally, but in Melbourne, Adelaide, Perth and Hobart, where growth has eased this quarter, affordability increasingly looked like the binding constraint on further increases. Sydney, Darwin, Brisbane and Canberra show the opposite pattern, growth accelerating despite already tight conditions, suggesting landlords there are still having room to push rents further. The result is a rental market splitting into two speeds, rather than moving as one. So the rental market is expected to remain tight in the coming months as government policy changes, low supply and interest rates affect rental affordability. And as Australians are paying record high rents across all the capital cities, as low vacancy rates means tenants are facing at landlord's market. Sydney house rents surged 6.3% or $50 in the June quarter to a record $850 a week on average, they said. This marks the strongest quarterly increase in 4 years and the largest increase of any capital city over the quarter. Quarterly growth was roughly five times faster than a year ago, lifting annual rental growth to a two-year high of 7.6% or $60. Sydney unit rents rose 4%, just $30, to a record $780 per week. That's the fastest quarterly increase in 3 years, and rental growth accelerated to more than three times the pace recorded a year earlier, pushing annual growth to 6.8% or $50. Despite a seasonal rise to 1.1% in June, Sydney's vacancy rate was unchanged from the same time last year and remained at a record low for this time of year. Over in Melbourne, Melbourne house rents rose 0.8% or $5 over the June 2026 quarter to a record high of $600 a week, marking the strongest June outcome in 2 years, despite a second consecutive increase. Momentum has eased, with quarterly gains running at around one-third the pace of the March quarter. Annual growth lifted to 1.7% or $10, but remains well below other capitals. Unlike other capitals, Melbourne has not shared in the June quarter acceleration, pointing to more subdued underlying conditions. This is consistent with an earlier adjustment in the market, where higher investor costs and policy settings weighed on activity. Yes, the state, of course, made it harder for investors to invest in and around Melbourne. Melbourne unit rents were unchanged over the quarter at a record $600 per week, reinforcing the stable conditions that characterized much of 2025. And annual growth held at 4.3% or $25, a 4.5-year low, suggesting that while rents remain elevated, momentum has stalled. The divergence between houses and units highlights uneven conditions, with landlords having less scope to push rents higher compared to other capitals. Despite a seasonal rise to 1.2% in June, vacancy remains the second lowest June outcome on record, matching 2024, highlighting that rental conditions are still tight, even as they begin to ease at the margin. Brisbane house rents increased 2.9% or $20 over the June quarter to a record high of $700 per week, marking the fourth consecutive quarterly increase. Growth has accelerated sharply, with gains running at around four times the pace of the previous quarter and delivering the strongest June outcome of 3 years. Annual growth has also strengthened to 7.7% or $50. That's the highest level in 2 years. In contrast, Brisbane unit rents held steady at a record $660 a week, ending a run of six consecutive quarters of growth. Annual growth eased to its slowest pace in 15 months at 4.8% or $30, and the divergence between houses and units points to emerging constraints in pricing, with landlords facing more resistance to further increases in the unit segment. Brisbane's vacancy rate held at 0.6% in June, matching 2022 as the lowest June on record. Adelaide house rents rose by 1.6% or $10 over the June 26 quarter to a record $650 a week, extending growth for a third consecutive quarter. While growth has slowed from the previous quarter, it remains at double the pace recorded a year ago. Annual growth accelerated to 4.8% or $30, the strong result in 15 months, as tight rental supply continues to underpin rent increases. And in contrast, Adelaide unit rents held steady over the quarter at a record high of $550 a week, marking the weakest June outcomes in 5 years. Annual growth eased to 5.8% or $30. That's the slowest pace in just over 4 years, pointing to a clear loss of momentum. And Adelaide's vacancy rate held at 0.4% in June. That's below the same time last year. While rental market conditions remain exceptionally tight, the vacancy rate is still above the record low of 0.2%. And with vacancies stable through 2026, supply constraints continue to support rental growth, although market tightness is not intensifying further. Canberra house rents rose 1.4% or $10 over the June 2026 quarter to a record high of $710 per week, following a flat March quarter. The increase marks the strongest June quarter outcome in 8 years, although it reflects a rebound from softer conditions earlier in the year rather than a sustained acceleration. Annual growth has doubled from the previous quarter to 2.9% or $20, but remains below recent peaks, highlighting the uneven nature of rental trends. Canberra unit rents were unchanged for a second consecutive quarter at a record $580 a week, marking the weakest June outcome in 2 years. Annual growth has slowed sharply to 1.8% or $10, halving from both the previous quarter and a year ago. The back-to-back flat results point to a clear loss of momentum, with unit markets leading the broader slowdown. Canberra's vacancy rate rose to 1.2% in June. That's above the same time last year, indicating an increase in available rental supply. And Perth house rents rose by 0.4% or $3 over the June quarter to a record $750 a week. Growth has slowed sharply, marking the weakest June quarter results in 6 years. Annual growth eased to 7.1% or $50, remaining elevated but clearly slowing from earlier peaks. Perth unit rents increased by 0.7% or $5 to a record $700 a week, and growth has slowed sharply to around 1/8 of the previous quarter's pace. Annual growth eased to 7.7% or $50, signalling a clear loss of momentum. And Perth's vacancy rate saw a seasonal rise to 0.5% in June and is unchanged year on year. The increase in rental stock is easing some of the pressure on the market, contributing to slower rental growth. And Hobart house rents increased by 0.8% or $5 over the June 2026 quarter to a record $625 a week, extending growth to 7 consecutive quarters. However, quarterly growth has eased noticeably to its slowest pace in almost 2 years. Annual rental growth remained unchanged from the previous quarter at 7.8% or $45, sitting at its strongest level in nearly 4 years. This suggests that while rental values continue to rise, they are doing so at a more moderate pace as momentum eases. In contrast, though, Hobart unit rents rose by 4% or $20 over the quarter to a record $520 per week, marking a second consecutive quarter of growth. While growth eased slightly from the March quarter, it was the strongest June result in 4 years, and annual growth accelerated to 7.8% or $38, its highest level in more than 3 years, highlighting continued rental demand. Hobart's vacancy rate rose to 0.4% in June, unchanged from June 25. The increase reflects improved rental supply, helping to ease market tightness and moderating rental growth. And Darwin's house rents rose 5.6% or $40 just over the June 26 quarter to a record $750 per week, roughly double the pace of the previous quarter and the strongest in 5.5 years. As a result, annual growth accelerated to 11.8% or $80. That's the highest level in almost 5 years, with Darwin overtaking Perth to become the second most expensive capital city for house rents. Darwin unit rents rose sharply, 8.3% actually, which is more than $50, to a record $650 a week. This marks the strongest quarterly increase since 2009 and the largest increase of any capital city over the quarter. This pushed annual growth to 18.2% or $100, its highest level in 4.5 years. Darwin's vacancy rate tightened to a record low of just 0.1% in June, underscoring extremely limited rental supply and ongoing pressure on the market. And just to triangulate all of that, separate figures from realestate.com.au's Market Insight report show that over the June quarter, the national median weekly advertised rent grew 3.1% to $670 nationally. That's a new high. Annually, it pushed national median rents up 6.4%, and it found that renters were paying $12,480 more in the June 2026 quarter on average nationally compared to 5 years ago. And we should also highlight recent trends in migration, which are still higher than long-term averages, putting more demand for rentals as people land in Australia. Though from my surveys, we know that many of those slip into rental stress quite quickly as they are shocked by the sheer costs of finding a place to live. And recent ABS building activity data show that to March 2026, that's the quarter, total dwellings commenced fell 11.2% to 48,012 dwellings. New private sector houses fell 3.5% to 27,658 dwellings commenced. And new private sector other residential commencements fell 20.7% to 19,116 dwellings. On the other hand, work in progress rose with more property in the middle of construction as time to build blows out. There were 243,864 total sector dwellings under construction in the March quarter, of which 90,972 were new houses in some original terms. And note, the federal government is bribing the states into getting more building approvals into the hopper, but it's not going that well, and it's taking a lot longer to complete properties. And the ABS reported that total dwellings completed in Australia fell 0.4% to 43,816 dwellings in the March quarter in seasonally adjusted terms. Private new houses completed fell 0.6% to 26,201 dwellings, and private new other residential completions rose 0.7% from December, to 16,365 dwellings. And across the states, Victoria leads the states in terms of total numbers, consistently above New South Wales, which of course is still the most popular state. Could this higher volume help to explain the continued fall in home prices in Victoria? And by the way, the total value of building work done rose 0.7% to $44.8 billion in the March quarter in season-adjusted terms. The rise was driven by non-residential building work done, which rose 2.2% to $17.7 billion. Some of that will be, of course, public sector investment. And new residential building work fell 1% to $23.2 billion, with work done on new houses down 3.1% to $13.5 billion, while new other residential buildings rose 1.9% to $9.7 billion. So you can see here the predominance of high-rise construction, which of course is very much government policy, never mind whether people want to live in them or not. Now, all of this means that the chances of the government reaching its goal of 1.2 million new homes falls further into oblivion and underscores how broken the housing market is. Demand remains strong, financial pressures are very high, and available property to rent at reasonable levels of affordability is all but gone. No surprise then that we are seeing such high levels of mortgage and indeed rental stress. And as I keep saying, the rental story is actually the epicenter of the current crisis that many Australians are facing. But I'm afraid that the political narrative around this is more about misdirection rather than actually real solutions. I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Many thanks for watching, and I'll see you again next time.